What's up, Georgia Tech fans? This is the staff from the Rumble Seat coming back at you with another exciting week of the From the Rumble Seat Roundtable. Unfortunately, things did not go as well as we were hoping for after the last roundtable, so hopefully we've got some good mojo going after this one. We'll see how it's going. Back again with a great panel of our staff. As always, our co-site manager, Ben Tankersley, is here. Ben, how you holding up after that loss?
It was not fun. Thankfully, I was able to make up for it after. Got to make dinner for the girlfriend, so it was always good.
Good to get your mind off things, huh?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
As necessary. Back again, we've got Kiefer Milligan, current student at Georgia Tech. Kiefer was campus, I'm sure, all excited on Monday afterwards.
Some people are just... There were people asking if Tim Byerly was not hurt so he'd come back and replace Justin Thomas after that win. So campus was a little bit weird.
Losses always do bring out the rationality in people, it turns out. And finally, bringing in this week, subbing for Tyler Duke, is our own Cade Lawson. Cade, how you holding up, buddy?
Pretty well. I was fortunate enough to actually make it up to Notre Dame to watch the game up there, so that was a great experience, but definitely not the way that I'd hoped for it to end.
Yeah, no kidding. I didn't realize anyone on the staff had made it up there. What was your assessment of the environment? How was it?
I haven't been to a whole ton of away games, definitely, for sure, but it was by far the best environment. The fact that they could fit like 85,000, however many people, into that stadium was amazing, different. And the most impressive thing to me was just how welcoming everyone was, even to a visiting team fan. They were, you know, everyone was saying welcome to Notre Dame probably 24 times while we were up there, so it was a great environment.
That was what I heard. I had another coworker that was up there for the game, and he said that the fans were just fantastic. They were so nice and so friendly. He said it was just the coolest environment and the coolest trip. Unfortunately, a couple of us were relegated to the internet, and I don't know that Ben and I had the same welcoming and happy experience there and some of the post-game threads and such, you know, but stuff happens, and that's kind of stuff you got to deal with sometimes when you lose. But anyways, what was the overall assessment of the game? We'll start with Ben here. What did you see? What was your biggest takeaway from this game?
My biggest takeaway from this game? Our blocking on the perimeter absolutely sucks. A lot of that comes from our inexperience at a back and wide receiver. But they were killing us on the edge the entire day. Cove couldn't really get anything going up the middle, so we were pretty much forced to go outside. And every time we would try something, it would pretty much get blown up. So that's something that we will definitely need to improve on. And that actually brings up an interesting point, because in the most recent depth chart, we see that Mikael Lance-Davis and Quade Wammerskirch were both added to the ABAC depth chart. So it'll be nice to get some more size in there and see what those two can do.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely adding some more size in there. It was a relatively small group before. You lost some guys like Deion Hill, Charles Perkins, that are a little bigger, a little more stout, which I think helps you out with some of that perimeter blocking. Kiefer, what was your biggest takeaway from this game?
Execution was awful at every level. Perimeter blocking, like Ben said, was awful. I can't tell you when I went back on the tape how many times I saw the tackle and the center or the guard released to the second level, even successfully, even when they were trying to jam them. And then either both would block the same guy or one guy would just keep running and block nobody. And then all of a sudden the guy he ran right by makes the tackle. It's not a question of they didn't manhandle us. They didn't manhandle us. We have to get out of our own heads and block people. And that was it's consistently mistakes all game.
Yep. Yeah, I thought it was kind of funny. The crew over at One Foot Down, the SB Nation Notre Dame blog, they were real pumped up after the loss for us. You know, they felt like their defense had really just turned it on and had killed it up there. And they did a film study that they released today, and it was funny that the guy that wrote this film study came to the conclusion at the end. He's like, you know, Notre Dame played pretty good defense, but Georgia Tech did a lot of things wrong. And so I think that kind of was a pretty big overarching conclusion that came from it. Kate, I don't know if you had a chance to rewatch the game or what you picked up on from in the stadium. What was your biggest takeaway?
I got a little opportunity to rewatch some of it on YouTube, but from in the stadium even, the biggest thing was definitely, I agree, execution. I think Paul Johnson said probably the most missed assignments in a game that he's coached since, what, 1985 or something? And that's just about as telling as it can be in terms of just poor execution on offense. You got to get all the blocks. You got to get everything you have to get done, and they didn't get it done.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. He was talking about how they were getting the looks they wanted from Notre Dame, and they just couldn't do what they wanted with them. And that definitely comes down to an execution thing. They were getting some different looks from that defensive front. You know, they ran anything from a 4-3 all the way through like a 3-5. Some weird looks that maybe not as used to, but there was stuff that they could be doing with them, and Coach, I think, knew what he wanted to do with it. It's just the players weren't able to make it happen. I think there's all sorts of things surrounding that game as far as some gamesmanship and just the big environment with the young players and all this. And I really think, you know, the thing that Coach Johnson's been saying all week is you just got to flush it and move forward. It was a bad game. Point out the mistakes, correct them, and move on, and don't get worried about it. I think my biggest takeaway was I was really impressed, honestly, with how well the defense hung with a very talented Notre Dame offense. They've got a fantastic offensive line, and the defense was able to get some pressure towards Kaiser. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. They only got the one sack from Adam Gotsis, but they certainly made him uncomfortable and hurried him sometimes. And at the end of the day, I mean, Notre Dame got through 9 offensive drives, and they had 17 points. And I think the defense kind of ran out of gas in the fourth quarter, but it was impressive for once to see the defense really keep the team in the game when the offense wasn't firing. I thought that was kind of neat to see and a little bit of an unusual thing to happen around Georgia Tech over the last few years, but certainly a positive takeaway. I think we're going to go ahead and move on into our first question that we got from our thread. First of all, thanks to everybody for the questions you guys submitted. I got one via email from an old friend. I get a couple of questions over social media, as always. You know, we're accepting them from therumbleseat.com or from therumbleseat@gmail.com, at FTRS blog on Twitter. We got the Facebook page. Send in your questions every week. We will be picking a few and answering them. And our first question this week comes from the Rumble Seat user GT Fenton. And the question goes, do you think the Georgia Tech's annual opponents, so the ACC Coastal, Clemson, and Georgia, are willing and capable to spend the time, money, and resources that Notre Dame did to prepare for the triple option offense? And as a follow-up, if teams do begin to prepare for Georgia Tech like this, will we have more games like this past one against teams with elite defenses? So, of course, there were a lot of stories this week that Notre Dame had hired an extra coach in the offseason, and they had recruited a walk-on specifically to run their scout team to prepare for an option offense. Notre Dame, obviously, not short for budget as a program and as a school, and so they've got some of these resources. And so I guess the question now being, is that the kind of stuff that is really going to cause losses in the future if it happens again with some of our opponents? And Kiefer, we'll start with you. Is this something that you could see some other ACC Coastal, some of your Clemsons, some of your Georgias trying to employ this strategy, and do you think it works?
I don't think so. I think Notre Dame's got more monetary resources than just about anybody, and they were more concerned about the option than anybody. I think all the other teams are a little bit more confident they can prepare for it without going through these extreme measures. So I don't really see anybody going to these lengths to try to stop the option. And I also think the whole preparation angle is being way overblown. Sure, they had the scheme wasn't bad. They had a pretty good scheme to stop the option, but we stopped ourselves when it comes down to it. There were a lot of opportunities where we turn and block somebody. We're going down the field for 20, 30 yards, but instead we got stopped for 1 yard because we didn't. So I think that's being overblown. Really, it comes down to Georgia Tech was not ready to face Notre Dame in that environment, and they also did a great job of preparing. I don't think that we're going to see a bunch of this in the future unless we execute poorly again. I think that's the bigger reason we'd see this in the future than is somebody can prepare like this again.
Sure. Kate, is this something that you feel like you would put past Clemson or Georgia to try, or you think it's something they might actually go for?
I mean, honestly, it just seems like a pretty interesting idea that I'm surprised no one's tried it before. At least we haven't heard anything about anyone trying it before. But to be perfectly honest, I don't think that this is I think what we're trying to make is kind of an option-specific thing. Like, this is a game plan that we're trying to get that's only going to stop the option. But, I mean, if you're going to hire coaches and spend all this money, use all these resources, bring in scout team quarterback, it seems to me like you could probably employ that to stop pretty much any offense you wanted to. So I'm not really worried about any long-term implications of that down the road, even if they do try to employ it. It seems to me like the teams that have the most success, the Virginia Techs and all those different teams, they kind of know what they're doing already without all this different help. So I think that teams would be better off following in their footsteps probably than doing what Notre Dame did.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. I mean, Ben, would you say that the offensive struggles had more to do with Notre Dame being prepared and having some of these resources they've spent, some coaches like that, or was it maybe more to do with the fact that they've got some pretty good players on defense?
I would say it certainly didn't hurt that they took the extra time, the extra coaches to get prepared for Georgia Tech's offense. But at the end of the day, any team on our schedule could go out and do that, and they probably would not get the same result just because Notre Dame's talent level is so much better than most of the rest of the ACC. And going back to the idea of would other teams in the ACC Coastal try something similar to this, I actually saw an article about what North Carolina was doing to prepare for us. I just want to read a quick excerpt from that. To prepare adequately for Georgia Tech, the team has set aside time on every Sunday since the start of training camp to prepare for the Yellow Jackets. The team spends a short 10 to 12 minute session working on techniques needed specifically for that game. So while they haven't quite hired a new coach, I mean, people know that they're going to have their hands full whenever they play Georgia Tech. Personally, I think that's good because they know what's coming and they're scared.
Yeah, I don't think it's any secret, especially after last year, you know, what Georgia Tech is able to do in a couple of those games, really on the national stage, particularly the last three games of the year, Georgia, Florida State, and Mississippi State, that, I mean, prepare all you want, but Georgia Tech is pretty good at what it's doing on offense, and you're going to have your hands full trying to stop them in any case. I think, Ben, I think maybe it was you, or I can't remember if it was you or Cade that made the point that you know, it's not a whole lot different than preparing for any other offense. And that's a point that Coach Johnson has made so often is that, you know, every time people will see somebody that stops the offense, you know, they're able to get it to stop working. You know, your Virginia Techs, your Clemsons have done that over the years. And people want to say, oh, man, like, I think they've finally found a way to stop this offense. You know, we should use that as a blueprint. And he's like, I mean, what makes this offense different than any other offense that anyone uses? And how has nobody found a blueprint for those? I mean, it kind of doesn't really make a whole lot of sense that they would have found a blueprint for this one at all. And I think that, again, I go back to how good Notre Dame's players are. And we'll talk a little more about this in a minute with the perimeter blocking. But I think there's something to do with when a couple of your guys might get hurt, and we know that Notre Dame has dealt with a lot of injury woes. They lost another guy during the game, torn ACL, I believe. There's something to it when you can go and replace those guys with 4- and 5-star level talent. I mean, Notre Dame is one of those top 10 or top 11 recruiting schools in the country over the last decade. I think SB Nation has kind of done a profile on that. And it really helps them to have depth, you know, in a next man up mentality when there really isn't that much of a drop off to the next player. And seniority maybe doesn't have as much of a difference in player quality. So, but great question from GT Fenton on that one. That was some good discussion. Anyone have anything else they wanted to add?
I will say that I think one thing that I haven't seen teams do a ton before that really messed us up was throwing a bunch of looks that we weren't prepared for, different formations constantly. That was why we kept having to use timeouts, because we couldn't get our pre-snap reads in. So that may be something we see in the future, but that's nothing you have to hire a coach for or recruit a quarterback for. It's just something new we might see in the future, and that's something I think we'll handle eventually.
That is a good point. There was a little bit of a wrinkle there where Notre Dame was kind of shifting around a lot before the snap, and I think combine that with the noise and some of the communication issues that the team was having anyways, and I think that certainly didn't help, and I know that 4 of the 6 timeouts Georgia Tech had were used to avoid delay of game penalties, because Justin was trying to check plays at the line and really struggling to get a look that he wanted, and that certainly did not help. So that's a good point as well, and something I wouldn't be shocked to see moving forward, someone try a little more out of.
Yeah, there was a lot of weird stuff about that game, like that whole ordeal with the turf. Like, I don't know if that was just like a mistake or if they intentionally told us that, hey, we're using the counter turf y'all use at the practice facility just to throw us off. And then they had the band on the field the whole game. It's like, what?
Yeah, a lot of kind of strange things around it. Coach Johnson talked about how apparently they had almost like a concert-style setup of speakers behind the bench that said it was kind of giving some players headaches almost because it was just so loud the whole game. Definitely contributed some communication issues. It all sounds pretty weird. I guess one of the other things was that Brandon Gaudin was talking about on the Paul Johnson show on Monday about how he and Sean Bedford were up in the box, you know, looking for play clocks in the end zones, and like they couldn't find them. And they were certainly there. I mean, it's a rule they have to be there. And there was some mention that maybe the band was kind of standing in front of them, kind of blocking anyone from seeing them. Then another commenter said on the site today that apparently they're posted like above the tunnels, and so nobody's going to be tall enough to block that. I don't really know, but again, a lot of weird stuff going on. And at the same time, I mean, Georgia Tech lost by 8. Mm-hmm. You know, it obviously could have been a lot worse, especially in the eyes of some of the national media, I think. But let's move on to our next question. This one came from user Ramblin' Wreck, so pretty much Ramblin' Wreck without the I. And the question is, a lot was talked about in the offseason about having to replace so many starters, namely all of the A-backs, B-backs, and wide receivers. Do you think the first 2 games lulled Georgia Tech into forgetting that these ball handlers and key blockers are still green? And is that why Georgia Tech lost the game? So we'll start with Cade on this one. Cade, what are your thoughts? Is that a major contributor? Do you think that maybe we were overestimating some of those players after the first couple of games?
Yeah, I mean, there's no argument that that's not. I think personally that some of the new guys we have might be even a little bit more talented than some of the ones we left, but just because they're so new, they're just not ready to step in and contribute like the Zach Laskys and Sinjin days that were so productive. Mm-hmm. In terms of it being the main factor, I think it definitely is, but you have to also consider all the different things we've already talked about. The crowd noise was crazy. The timing was all off, the assignments, all that different kind of stuff also has to be considered. So all that just kind of combined into, I don't know what, like a conflagration of just terrible football.
Yeah, I don't know that anybody would say that that's the one reason that, you know, Georgia Tech lost. I think there were all sorts of issues going on, and that's a good point. Ben, what's your assessment? Do you think that maybe we were a little overconfident in those guys after the first couple of weeks?
I think you could definitely say that. I mean, like Kate said, I think the talent level actually did go up, but without that experience, this is not an easy offense to run. I mean, I know Paul Johnson's always talking about how he would much rather have fifth-year seniors be playing than the true freshmen. You'll make more of an impact as a fifth-year senior because you will be that much more knowledgeable about what's going on in the offense, your assignments. And having so many either true freshmen or first-year players or first-year starters in there, I mean, you knew that they weren't going to know the offense nearly as well as all of the experience that we had last year. And I think you know, averaging 60-something points through those first two games, even though it was against Alcorn State and Tulane, our players kind of got in the mindset, oh, yeah, we got this. You know, we'll be fine. Whatever.
Kiefer, would you say that from some of those new guys, do you think what you saw on Saturday was maybe a little closer to what we should expect moving forward, or do you think it was more of an outlier as we look? If we're standing at the end of the season looking back, do you think that's more of an outlier or more kind of a sign of things to come?
No, I think it's probably more of an outlier. I think this game was the perfect storm of things that can mess up Georgia Tech football. I mean, there's things we already talked about, just the atmosphere. They showed they weren't ready, yes, and I think the inexperience with the backs was a major reason why we lost, but going back and look at the tape, like the fifth-year seniors on the offensive line weren't getting their assignments either. So I can't really say that it's the inexperience. Will we see this in the future? No, I don't think we're going to see a defense this talented, except maybe Georgia. That's about the only other one that has this kind of talent. So I really, Florida State maybe as well, but I don't see it being this bad again.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I was mentioning it a little bit earlier, but I think part of the struggles that some of these guys were having are how strong and athletic and talented some of these Notre Dame defenders were. I think that definitely played a pretty big role in some of the guys struggling with that perimeter blocking, namely the A-backs and the receivers. And like you pointed out, I mean, it wasn't just the fact that there were young guys having problems. Seniors like Aaron Joe, Brian Chamberlain were having the same problems. It was interesting looking through that film review, and they were pointing out all of the mistakes that Georgia Tech's offensive line was making. Double-teaming guys that aren't supposed to be double-teamed, and people just being set free that were supposed to be blocked somewhere, and offensive linemen getting caught up in a mess where they should have been taking a defender out of the play, and it was a whole bunch of stuff that I don't think it was really restricted to old or young. Kind of one of the things that Ben and Cade were touching on is that I do think that, I mean, Johnson has made this comment too, that this is about the most athletic team he's had since being at Georgia Tech, and I think that the A-backs in particular, there is a very high ceiling with all of those guys. I am interested to see what happens when they add in a couple of bigger guys like Mikel Lance Davis and Quade Weimerskirch, see if that improves at all. I did think in the first two games, you know, the perimeter blocking was really good as compared to what it could have been with a whole bunch of freshmen. And then credit to Coach Lamar Owens hitting those A-backs with some of that knowledge. But we'll have to see what happens. It's a bit of a weird place to be in when you've played two teams that were inferior and one team that might be the best defense you played all year. I mean, it's kind of, don't know what to expect moving forward. Do you guys have anything else there?
Yeah, I just want to kind of say that even outside of the skill position players besides Justin Thomas, I think even Justin Thomas might be sort of a part of, not that he was, you know, a negative factor, but maybe a little bit of why we lost the game. He was not, obviously didn't have his best game. There were quite a few times where even from where I was sitting, he like blatantly overthrew, I think it was Quay Searcy, pretty late in the game on what would have been a pretty big play. So it definitely wasn't just the young players that were not getting the job done.
Yeah, it's a great point. I definitely look at that as one of the worst games we've seen Justin Thomas play.
I would say it's the worst.
Yeah. Yeah, people were talking about the Duke game of last year being the only other one that might compare from what we've seen of him, but he was kind of injured in that game too. If you listen to me on Buzz Talk Radio on Monday, I think I posted the link to the site, but that was one of my biggest takeaways from the game is that Justin isn't invincible. He's capable of having a bad game. And he does need help from guys around him. I mean, he can't do it by himself. And so definitely what Kiefer was saying, it was the perfect storm, I think. All right, let's move on to the next one. And this is kind of a related question. I thought it was a very insightful one because it was something I had thought about actually in the last couple of days that made me think about. This one comes from one of the more frequent commenters around the site. That would be the Bugman 10. And the question is, do you think Georgia Tech is feeling the loss of Dennis Andrews? Wasn't he our best blocking A-back? And, of course, Andrews was dismissed from the team in the offseason. I believe it was student code of conduct violation, something to that effect. He would have been, I believe, the second most senior scholarship A-back behind only Broderick Snoddy. And I'm guessing I know what the answer is going to be here, but, Ben, do you feel like that loss is kind of really being felt right now?
I think it's more than just Dennis Andrews. I think we're missing all of our A-backs from last year. Like, I know outside of just Dennis Andrews, yeah, he was a great blocker, but you also got fantastic blocking from guys like Deion Hill, Ascension Days when he would go out to A-back. Pretty much they were either, you know, going to make a good blocker block well enough for Justin Thomas to get through and make a play. And this year, we're not getting nearly as much of that. One guy that has really stood out to me is, I think he's a redshirt freshman, Clinton Lynch. I'd say he's not really anything too special athletic-wise, but he's going to go out and he's made some good blocks. He's getting people out of the way, doing whatever it takes to make sure that Tech gets through.
Yeah, he's definitely one that's impressed me as well. He was, I think, a late addition to that recruiting class after somebody had dropped out. I guess he was the same class as Miles Autry would have been, because they both went to Norcross High School there in Gwinnett County. But yeah, he has impressed me. But Cade, what are you seeing there? Do you feel like Andrews is the biggest loss out of that group? I guess is it really something that we're feeling right now?
Definitely. I think that he was gonna play a huge role in the offense this season, just like he did last season, even if he wasn't touching the ball as much as, you know, you would expect from someone who you consider a big offensive player. But I don't think that we were by any means a Dennis Andrews away from beating Notre Dame. We were definitely, you know, even if we had him, that's not a game that we likely would have won playing the way that we played it. And just all in all, we definitely missed him, but I think that dismissing the guys who are going to be causing problems like he apparently was on the team is definitely better for the long-term implications for the team.
Kiefer, it looks like you agree with a couple of those sentiments.
Yeah, Dennis Andrews would have helped. We obviously would like to have him back, but I really don't think that he was going to make or break this season or make or break any single game. When you got a five-man A-back rotation, you're really not going to be in enough snaps to really change the season, in my opinion. But what I think we are missing right now is a bit of size. I think from St. John Days, Deion Hill, Charles Perkins, Dennis Andrews, all those guys are about 6 foot, 200 pounds. Right now we've got guys 5'9", 5'11", they're all less than 200 pounds. They're fast, they're athletic, and they can catch the ball, but I think it's really shown up in the blocking game. If you can get that size, I think we have we saw that with Clinton Lynch. He's about 6 foot, inching a little bit closer to 200 pounds. That's why I'm really excited, and I hope Mikel Lance Davis plays this week. He's got some serious size. He played a little bit of slot receiver in high school, and I think if he can really contribute to that blocking game, that will be huge for us.
I definitely expect to see him play this week. Coach Johnson mentioned something on the radio show about how, you know, we'll probably play him this week, and I think that's just Coach Johnson's non-committal way of saying that he's going to play, basically. I think that the biggest thing, and you mentioned this a little bit with Quay Searcy, that kid is pretty quick and pretty special, and to lose him for a significant amount of time, I think the thing that might actually hurt the worst is the passing game. He was nearly a threat over the top there on a pass during the Notre Dame game, and he has the game-breaking speed, and he's got good hands that could really, really be useful in that context, and I think it's a huge deal that he's out in those terms because it's been talked about a little bit, I think, in a couple of circles that might be the biggest question for this entire offense moving forward is the passing game and can they get anything out of it, you know, to kind of back the defense out of the box. Do you guys have anything else that you wanted to talk about with regards to the ABACs or any of the perimeter blocking, any of that? I think we might have exhausted that topic a little bit. Well, let's move on to the defense real quick. This next question came from one of our users, Jacket for Life. And the question is this defense any better than last year's? With all this attention on Georgia Tech's offense, I'd like to remind my fellow Tech fans that Kizer was a second or third string quarterback making his first start. I still haven't seen the pass rush we've been expecting to see so far, not against Notre Dame, not against Tulane, not against Alcorn State. I'm gonna start by mentioning that Kizer, yes, was the backup quarterback. But again, we go back to that Notre Dame ability to recruit. It's not like they're replacing Zaire with Rudy. They're replacing him with like a four-star, five-star kind of quarterback who has shown some signs of promise, things like that. So with that being said, Kiefer, have you been disappointed with the pass rush? Happy with it so far? What's been your take on it?
Sacks are overrated. Pressure is not. I really think that the pass rush is a lot better. You go back to the ACC championship game last year. Jameis Winston was sitting in a perfect arc that did not move. If you look at the tape of Notre Dame, despite all the talent on that offensive line, they were moving. The pocket was constantly changing shape. It was collapsing into Kizer. He was having to get rid of the ball sooner than he wanted. Those are the types of things that are really going to improve a defense. Now, yeah, we only got one sack, although we basically sacked him a second time, and he was able to flip the ball out to Procise by some miracle. Going back in the film again, I also Notre Dame got away with a lot. I think I saw four holds on Gotsis that weren't called. I am impressed. I'm impressed with the pass rush. Based on what we've had in the past. You know, maybe we're not going to rack up 50 sacks this year as a unit, but we're going to affect the quarterback. And if we affect the quarterback with this secondary that we have, we're in business.
I think you make a great point that sacks might be a little bit overrated as a statistic, but it's more overall about QB pressure. Because whether you actually get home or if you force a quicker decision and a bad throw, it kind of accomplishes some of the same goals at sometimes. Kate, it looks like you would agree with some of those sentiments as well.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with pretty much everything. This is definitely a completely different defense than the 2014 defense was. If you had told me that the 2014 defense would have held Notre Dame to 30 points, I would have been absolutely ecstatic, and that's what this defense has a promise to do pretty much every game. In terms of the pass rush, I agree with that. Kizer looked extremely uncomfortable, especially early in the game, even though it didn't appear on the stat sheet because he was making some pretty crazy just throwing it away when they were almost about to sack him because he's a pretty big guy too. So outside of some fluky little third down stuff that was going on, I think the defense was pretty excellent.
I think they did kind of struggle to finish the drill on some of those where they just about got to him and he'd either slip out and kind of start extending the play and making passes that way, but I think you're right that he did look fairly uncomfortable to a large degree. Ben, as you look at the defensive performance on Saturday, they gave up 31 points, a lot of that in the fourth quarter. Are you encouraged, discouraged? What is your takeaway?
I would definitely say I'm encouraged by what I saw. Kiefer and Cade both hit on this. Sacks are overrated. But when your defense doesn't get a lot of sacks, it can make it a little frustrating to watch. I'm not going to lie. Watching the Tech defense try and sack DeShone Kizer reminded me a lot of watching John Abraham and the Atlanta Falcons defense try to sack Drew Brees. They would get really close, but then Drew Brees would just step up and find a receiver downfield to throw to. We were getting close, but we just couldn't finish. That shows that we do still have some room left to grow, but we're getting there. So I was definitely encouraged, and I think that this defense is only going to continue to get better. I think we're going to start seeing some more playing time from some of our true freshmen. The guy that I'm really excited about over at safety, AJ Gray. Kid's going to be a beast.
Yeah, he has been excellent in the time that he's played so far. And I think it's interesting, you look at him, I think he's backing up DeMond Smith right now at the free safety spot on the depth chart, and he's all by himself as a true freshman. Meanwhile, Jamal Golden being backed up by a couple of more veteran players. I think it's Sean Kagawa and Corey Griffin. And that Gray has come in as a true freshman and is already a backup and pushing for quite a bit of playing time. I think some of the comments that Coach Johnson has made over the last couple of weeks kind of are in line that they have very, very high expectations and hopes for him. And there's been some people saying that he's, you know, one of the best true freshman defensive backs at Georgia Tech in a very long time. And so it's definitely encouraging to see from him. From the whole defense, I think a lot of good points made about pressure versus sacks and just kind of getting to people. I think it should probably be remembered, you know, we're talking, and I think Kiefer made this point about how the pockets, you know, were pretty clean last year, whereas on Saturday they were all changing shapes and kind of collapsing fairly quickly. And just remember that there was some serious, like, NFL talent on that offensive line, and that they were able to do that against that group. I don't look too hard, especially at the Alcorn State game. I mean, part of their entire offensive game plan was to get rid of the ball before a pass rush could have gotten to them. I mean, you could have been playing with like one offensive lineman and they were still trying to get the ball out before they would have been able to get to the quarterback in that game. So I'm not going to be too concerned over no sacks in that game. The Tulane game as well, maybe could have hoped for a little more there, but I think that a lot of their game plan as well was try to get it out quicker. Some quarterbacks can do that, some can't. But anyways, that's all the questions that we had with regards to the Notre Dame game. Don't want to dwell on it for too long. It's probably kind of healthy to move forward at some point. But did anyone have anything else they wanted to hit on with regards to the game, whether it was the most recent question or just anything else that really stood out?
With regards to the pass rush, I think we're blitzing less this year. It certainly feels like it, at least.
Yeah, I would agree. It does feel that way. I've seen both PJ Davis and Tyler Marcordes get involved there, but it doesn't seem like it's a constant, you know, every single play kind of thing, and I think it really opens up the defensive playbook to do that. Special teams, nobody, anybody?
I got one more note on the pass rush actually too. So I think, Joey, I think you mentioned this earlier maybe, just how good Notre Dame's offensive line is. And the fact that they were able to do what they were able to do, make him uncomfortable even if they weren't getting those sacks, is pretty impressive. Because they've got, at left tackle, they've got Ronnie Stanley. This is not me saying this. This is what I read on the internet from some of the well-regarded draft experts, that if he had declared last year, he easily would have been the top offensive lineman selected in the draft, Ronnie Stanley. And they were making him uncomfortable. They drew, I think, one or two holding penalties on him. He had four total penalties in the game, though, three false starts. So just what they were doing to some of these really talented Notre Dame offensive linemen was really encouraging.
That's a great point. And I'm betting he's not the only one that's considered a draft prospect either there. So, all right, well, let's as Coach Johnson said, let's flush it and move on to next week. We'll get to our last question here, and it comes from user CHB2C, another pretty regular commenter around the site. And the question goes that, I watched a little of Duke's game against Northwestern and wasn't really impressed. Is Northwestern really as good as their ranking suggests? Of course, the Wildcats are a top 25 team. Duke may have as hard a time this week as the Jackets are recovering from a loss. We talked a little bit about this beforehand. Don't know that any of us really had a chance to watch a ton of that game, but maybe we can talk about, you know, what we've seen from Duke so far has been a lot of strong defensive performances, at least on the scoreboard. Maybe less strong offensive performances to some degree. We'll start with Ben. Do you have any real expectations for what you're going to see this weekend from Georgia Tech's, I guess, entire game against Duke?
I honestly have no idea what we're going to see this week. I feel like really neither Georgia Tech or Duke or we really know a whole lot about right now. I know that we did better against Tulane than Duke did, so take that for what it's worth. If that means that we're that much of a better team, then sure, let's go with that. I do think that, you know, some of Georgia Tech's players are still mad about how the events unfolded last year in the game, so I think they're going to come out ready to get some revenge. Personally, I'd love to see us run up the score on David Cutcliffe, but that's just me and probably about everyone else.
Yeah, I'm not sure that he's a public favorite of a lot of fans around the country. I like you going to the Transitive Property College Football, always a reliable one there with the Tulane results. Kiefer, as you look at Duke's track record and what both teams are coming off of, do you like Georgia Tech's chances? What are some of your expectations?
I am loving Georgia Tech's chances in this one. You can read my preview about kind of how I feel. It really hasn't changed based on the Notre Dame loss. I'm just feeling 2011 Kansas all over again, and I'm excited. The thing that I'm looking at is I didn't see Northwestern versus Duke, but I did get to see Northwestern versus Stanford. Northwestern's not good on offense, and neither was Stanford. It was an offensive struggle fest. And then Stanford went and beat USC somehow. I don't really know what happened there. So maybe Northwestern's better than we thought they were, but I'm still not really buying that. Duke really struggled to score points in the first half against Tulane. They struggled to score points the whole game against Northwestern. I think they lost too many guys on offense from last year. You've got Jamison Crowder gone. You've got some of the running backs gone. You've got Lakin Tomlinson, who was a first-round draft pick at offensive line. And they really beat us last year by running us down and running over us. They're not going to be able to do that this year from what I've seen in this defense, especially without Tomlinson. So I really don't see them scoring a whole lot of points on us, and I think we're angry and we're looking to get after it in this game. I'm predicting a blowout to the tune of 49-17. I really am. I am going to go with that bold statement on that. And Duke has showed me nothing to prove me wrong otherwise, and I was terrified of the Notre Dame game at this point last week. I have no fear right now.
Well, that's got to be a good feeling. That makes one of us. I'll point out, don't forget that Duke also lost their quarterback from last year. Anthony Boone graduated. That's another key piece. And I looked back earlier today at the season preview that we did a few weeks back for the Duke game and talked about some people that they lost. And I had forgotten that it was Boone, it was Crowder, it was Tomlinson, it was, I think, was it Shaq Powell or whoever there. What was that?
It was Sneed, the guy that ran over us last year.
Yeah, Sneed. I think they lost one of their best defenders, too. I mean, they lost a lot of firepower, again, from a game that they won by 5 points. Interesting. Cade, are you feeling pretty bullish on this game, too, for Georgia Tech, or are you a little more worried?
I don't think I'm feeling that much of a blowout, but I still think it's going to be a pretty easy win. The atmosphere in particular is something that's going to be a complete shift from Notre Dame, where you don't get a second of silence to where I saw during the highlights are all I saw from the Northwestern Duke game, and it was a good game, you know, late even, and there was not a single person in the stadium. So that's going to be a lot different, and so yeah, I think it's going to be a pretty easy win, but not humongous or anything.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a great point, and that was something that I was thinking about, too, is how Coach Johnson was talking about all these players were going on their first road trip to Notre Dame, and they're playing in front of 80,000 people and perhaps the most storied venue in college football, and it's, you know, you can't hear yourself think, and it's just this big moment. You're playing eventually against a bunch of guys that are going to be in the NFL one day, and it's very easy for your eyes to get kind of big and get a little starstruck. Next week we go to Duke, which struggles to fill a 40,000 seat stadium, and you know, it's, you know, people sitting there in the in the crowd with textbooks and, you know, with a please keep quiet sign. I mean, it sounds like a golf gallery in there. So it's like, it literally is like a polar opposite environment versus last week. And so that's, I think that'll make for a fun locker room speech before the game is, you remember what happened last week? Yeah, this is nothing like that. You know, look at the quality of teams. One of the things was one of the Twitter accounts today from Buzz Talk Radio actually was pointing out that Duke right now has a top 10 scoring defense in the country, believe it or not. They are holding FBS opponents even to very few points per game. They gave up 7 to Tulane. They gave up 19 to Northwestern. And some people are kind of concerned about that. And then, you know, I turned it around, and I think, like I said before, it's like, but how good are either of those offenses? You know, that you held not very good offenses to very few points, does that really say anything? I'm not so sure I'm buying it. You know, at the same time, I saw somebody was talking about they wanted to bet on Duke to cover a 10-point spread, and I was telling them I don't think that's a good idea. But I was also telling them I probably wouldn't bet on Georgia Tech to cover a 10-point spread either. I mean, it's like I don't know how much I can trust this team at this point based on two games, again, against inferior opponents and one game against one of the best teams in the country. So, you know, it sets up to be maybe I think as much as we learned a lot about Georgia Tech last week, I think you learned about a lot about them this week. Coming off a loss, do you guys, you know, last year they lost to Duke, and then they lost again the next week to North Carolina. Ben, are you concerned about the team's morale, mentality coming off a loss?
I would say right now they're probably a little pissed off about blowing, I think Paul Johnson said, like 70-plus assignments this week. So I think that kind of gave them the jump start that they needed. I think they're going to come out. They're going to be a lot more focused than they were last week. And honestly, I don't think they have a problem winning this week at all.
Kate, if you had just lost in pretty bad fashion to Notre Dame and you were going to Duke this week to that stadium and that environment and that opponent, would you be pretty pumped up to redeem yourself?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's never fun to lose, and it's even less fun, I'm sure, to lose in front of 80,000 people screaming the whole time. So, yeah, it's definitely going to be that big shift, that big this is probably one of the biggest games of the season, actually, trying to see how the team's going to bounce back from their first loss, hopefully their last loss, actually. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, this is a huge game, and it's going to be – I hope the team's going to be pumped up playing in Duke.
At this point, probably a fairly underrated game. I think you're right. I mean, it shows how much they're able to kind of circle the wagons and get this thing back on the rails. Kiefer, are you worried at all about motivation in this game in any regards? It doesn't sound like it.
Nope. I knew after that game against Notre Dame, I wanted to punch somebody in the mouth, and I think this team also wants to punch somebody in the mouth right now. And who better to punch in the mouth than David Cutler, come on.
I can't really think of anybody I'd rather punch in the mouth than Dave Cutcliffe. yeah, great point. All right, well, let's go around and make predictions. I think, Kiefer, you already kind of made one. I don't know if you want to throw another bold prediction of some variety in there, you know, Justin Thomas running for 400 yards or something like that. You know, so you said you think 49-17?
I think we get back to our business of pounding the B-back that we saw against Georgia and against Mississippi State last year. I think we get back to the point where we're going to get angry. We're going to give this ball to this very big man, and he's going to run down your throat. So that's what I'm hoping to get back to, because you can't string out the dive. When the dive's working, you're done. And what we saw against Notre Dame was getting strung out. So our perimeter blocking is bad. Let's stop relying on it, and let's just run people down.
Sounds like a good strategy to me. Kate, what's your prediction for this game?
I think I'm going to go probably something like 35-20.
Okay. Any expectations on what the biggest key to the game will be?
Biggest key to the game? I think it's definitely going to be opening back up those perimeters that were so I guess they were, you could say, clogged up or just not working well against Notre Dame. I can't remember too well last year, but Duke did a really good job, I think, last year controlling that aspect of the game. in Atlanta. Also, obviously, did a good job controlling Justin Thomas, even if that meant twisting his ankle. But, you know, that's a different topic. So, yeah, I think opening up the perimeter is going to be the biggest key to the game.
Yeah, Duke twisting Justin Thomas's ankle, not that that's any of our business. Ben, what do you got on this game? You expecting a big win, close win? You worried?
The more I think about this game, the more optimistic I get about it. So this will probably change before the end of the week, but right now I'm going to say final score 42-17. I think that Patrick Skov will have his best game to date. Well over 100 yards, averaging 5.5 to 7 yards carry, and we're going to run it straight down Duke's throat. It's going to be fun to watch. Unfortunately, I'll be not really unfortunately, but I will be relying on the radio call this weekend to get to listen to Brandon and Sean for the first time this year, so it should be fun.
It's been pretty fun for me, I guess. I'm down here in Houston, Texas, and been able to watch the game on TV, thankfully, but been streaming Sean and Brandon on the GT Radio app. I'm not sure that I would have been able to tolerate the NBC broadcasters last week. I haven't heard a whole lot of comments that made them sound unbiased. So, you know, we'll probably go for the same game plan again this week. Personally, I think 38-20 sounds kind of right. That was, I think, around what Kate had thought. I'm guessing there's still a couple of drives that kind of stall out, and they're going to have some trouble. I think Duke is quite a bit better than either a Tulane or an Alcorn State. I don't think they're as good as a Notre Dame. If you would like to argue that with me, I'd be happy to. But I do think that Georgia Tech is going to have to get some stuff back in order. I kind of expect it to happen. I think a lot of the weird stuff that went on around the game last week goes away, and they're able to kind of get away from the noise and the big moment and just get back to what they do best. That was kind of some of the things that Coach Johnson was talking about is, you know, we got to play our game, play it right. And I think that's what happens. I think they pound the B-back, like you were saying. I think you got to establish that and hit some big plays on the perimeter and get the perimeter blocking working again and instill some confidence back in the fan base and everything like this. I think it's plenty possible, and I think the Georgia Tech gets it done. Closing comments. Anybody have anything really watching for this weekend other than Georgia Tech?
I want to see how perimeter blocking improves this week with Quade Weimerskirch and Mikel Lance Davis joining the rotation at A-back. I really want to go out and just watch Quade just lay out a couple defenders. I love Quade Weimerskirch. He's going to be awesome.
I feel like he is a he is an inevitable name national champion in the near future. He's got a great afro too. Well, good deal. So this has been fun again. If Georgia Tech does somehow fall again this weekend, maybe we'll stop doing this altogether. I guess it's kind of some bad karma, but
one when we did it through text.
Yeah. Maybe that's what we got to go back to. You know, can't throw anything off. I'll tell you right now, I'm still wearing the same outfit and sitting in the same chair I was last year. It was working then, hey. And as Bud Light says, it's only weird if it works, or if it doesn't work, excuse me. So, well, good deal. So we'll be back again next week. You know, make sure to submit your comments again through Facebook, through Twitter, at FTRSblog, through email from therumbleseat@gmail.com. We've really enjoyed it, and we'll try to maybe answer a couple of questions that we didn't really get to in the comments. We might throw a couple of answers up there as well. So have a great weekend. Go Jackets. Let's get this win in Duke, and we'll talk to you again next week.